I have some selections from the Christian Bible to share with you this morning. The first is Matthew chapter 7, verses 1 through 5. Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, "Let me take the speck out of your eye," when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. From Matthew chapter 9, verses 10 through 13. While Jesus was having dinner at Matthew's house, many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him and his disciples. When the Pharisees saw this, they asked his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" On hearing this, Jesus said, "It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. But go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice." John chapter 8, verses 2 through 11. At dawn, he appeared again in the temple courts, where all the people gathered around him, and he sat down to teach them. The teachers of the law and the Pharisees brought in a woman caught in adultery. They made her stand before the group and said to Jesus, "Teacher, this woman was caught in the act of adultery. In the law, Moses commanded us to stone such women. Now what do you say?" They were using this question as a trap in order to have a basis for accusing him. But Jesus bent down and started to write on the ground with his finger. When they kept on questioning him, he straightened up and said to them, "Let any one of you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her." Again, he stooped down to write on the ground. At this, those who heard began to go away one at a time, the older ones first, until only Jesus was left with the woman still standing there. Jesus straightened up and asked her, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" "No one, sir," she said. "Then neither do I condemn you," Jesus declared. "Go now and leave your life of sin." And finally, from Luke chapter 10, verses 25 through 37. On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. "Teacher," he asked, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" "What is written in the law?" he replied. "How do you read it?" He answered, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." "You have answered correctly," Jesus replied. "Do this and you will live." But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" In reply, Jesus said, "A man was going from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came to where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him, bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper. 'Look after him,' he said, 'and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have.' Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers?" The expert in the law replied, "The one who had mercy on him." And Jesus told him, "Go and do likewise." Well, calm down. Thanks to everyone for inviting Mary and Esther and I to be part of your community for the weekend. It's been really fun so far. It's gorgeous weather. Eric loaned my husband a bicycle, and he's off biking. Can't wait to hear what he does. Anyway, it's a very exciting time to be choosing a new minister, and I always love coming to congregations to do this work with you, you know, because it is a time of potentiality and change and new things, and I'm always jealous. Okay. We, the member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association, covenant to affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person, as long as we are comfortable with their appearance. So here are some things I've heard said over the years. I was at a contra dance last night, and a man kept asking me to dance. He had two left feet, crooked teeth, and an unusual accent. All the women were trying to stay away from him. "You have such a pretty face. It's a shame to hide it behind all that weight. I tell you what, if you lose 50 pounds, I'll take you to Boston and buy you a new wardrobe." "She's only 24. What kind of life experience could she possibly have? She is way too young to be a minister." "Oh, what a cute little fella. He's going to be big and strong, just like his daddy." "We need more members. But of course, we can't have just anybody. Why do all the weird ones come to our church?" The first time she came to the house, I thought, how unprofessional, because I noticed she was wearing rubber thongs. "Dyke, Leslie, come on, baby. I can show you a good time. Then you'll know what a real man is." "Remember now, Jews only want your money. Don't play with those colored girls, honey. They're dirty. Japs, I don't care how smart they are. They bombed Pearl Harbor, and for that, I'll never forgive them." "Well, I understand she's done great work with people in need, but her clothes, her hair, her weight, wouldn't she turn people off and offend them just by walking in the room?" Is everyone truly welcome at the table? So I'd like to tell you a story, one that changed my life. Okay, picture this. I'm a senior in high school, 1971. And I had to come up with a project for my psychology class. I was curious about how appearance affected people's reactions, so I set off to the local university to test my hypothesis. I borrowed a freshman English textbook from a friend and set off for the library. I spent an hour or so wandering around the library, sitting down at different tables where there were several students studying. I would smile at everyone as I sat down, open my book, and start to read. I minded my own business, appeared to be studying intensely, all the while watching their reactions. After a few minutes, I would get up, find another table, and do it again. The first time I went to the library, I went as me. At that time, that involved long, straight blonde hair, of course, basic clean t-shirt and jeans and sandals. I didn't wear makeup or jewelry in those days, so it was just me and my English book moving from table to table. Basically, there was no reaction to my presence. People looked up when I sat down, but everyone just went back to their work and paid me no attention. The next time I went to the library, I took on a new persona, slovenly hippie. It was me, but this time my hair was unwashed and unbrushed. I hadn't bathed recently. And my overalls and t-shirt were just a tad on the funky side. I was barefoot. I wore an odd collection of beaded necklaces and peace signs. I carried my English textbook. I smiled, sat down, and began to read. And slowly, but persistently, everyone at every table got up and left. Okay, you can probably see where this is going. So the next time I went to the library, I was Jane the sorority wannabe, dressed meticulously in conservative blouse and skirt, stockings and low heels, with done-up hair, tasteful jewelry, and just a touch of makeup. I headed for the library, book in hand. wander around, smile, sit down at a crowded table and start to read. Smiles all around. Some light conversation. Oh, I'm taking that class too. Two requests for a date. I was stunned. I was still me, no matter what I looked like. I was me, with my hopes and aspirations, my fears and concerns, my joys and my struggles. Yet I was treated differently, solely based on my appearance. Is everyone truly welcome at the table? Let me take you back to the statements I made in the beginning. I was at a contra dance last night, and a man kept asking me to dance. He had two left feet, crooked teeth, and an unusual accent. All the women were trying to stay away from him. Turns out my friend ended up with a group that went out for coffee after the dance, and she ended up sitting next to this man, who had a PhD in comparative religions, taught at the local university, and was fascinating. By the end of the evening, she had asked him out on a date. You have such a pretty face, it's a shame to hide it behind all that weight. I tell you what, if you lose 50 pounds, I'll take you to Boston and buy you a new wardrobe. Well, that's me and what my mother told me 30 or so years ago. Funny thing, it didn't work and only damaged our already shaky relationship. She's 95 years old now, and I still feel like I'm not good enough when I am in her presence. She's only 24. What kind of life experience could she possibly have? She's way too young to be a minister. This was heard in the halls of my seminary, Star King School for the Ministry. Just one thing, though. Rebecca had a brilliant mind. She graduated with honors in Hebrew studies from Swarthmore. She was gifted at ritual, a wonderful listener, and eventually my closest friend at seminary, even though I was old enough to be her mother. Oh, what a cute little fella. He's going to grow up to be big and strong, just like his daddy. Well, our daughter, Dana, now 24, she was cute as a button as a baby and always, always mistaken for a boy, even when she was dressed in pink. And she grew up to be an accomplished yoga practitioner, skier, snowboarder, biker, mountain climber, disc golf player, and stronger than her daddy. We need more members, but of course we can't have just anybody. Why do all the weird ones come to our church? This, unfortunately, was said in the sanctuary of the first church I served about the new family that had just visited. He wore nail polish and a studded dog collar. She was pierced and tattooed and looked a bit wild. But soon they and their three children had embraced church life. He developed and maintained the website. She taught RE and served on the board. And their kids considered the church their second home. The first time she came to the house, I noticed she was wearing rubber thongs, and I thought, how unprofessional. All right, that was said about me when I was a hospice nurse in California. I had just moved from Vermont, and it was California. Like, I thought you could do what you wanted in California. Okay, so maybe I couldn't. But anyway, Mrs. A and I became wonderful friends as I helped her care for her husband as he died a very painful death from throat cancer. And she stopped noticing my feet. Dyke, Leslie, come on, baby, I can show you a good time. Then you'll know what a real man is. Well, this man was carrying a 2x4 as he approached me and my friend. We were two women leaving a top-notch restaurant that also happened to house a gay bar. My friend was straight, very straight, but that didn't matter to him, and we ran all the way to the nearest police station. Remember now, Jews only want your money. Don't play with those colored girls, honey. They're dirty. Japs, I don't care how smart they are. They bombed Pearl Harbor, and for that, I'll never forgive them. I heard all this in my childhood home in Vermont in those days. We were not known for our progressive values. We were just old-fashioned Yankees in the whitest, most Christian state in the nation. The only other in my childhood were the French-Canadian Catholics. I never even met a Jewish person until I went to college, and they weren't interested in money. The first African-American family moved to my town in 1968. I played with those colored girls at a motel playground in Arizona in 1962 and never understood why my mother called me back to the room when I was having such a good time. As for the Japanese, that had a very interesting turnabout. Late in my father's career, his company began exporting their product to Japan, and they put my father in charge of this project. He traveled to Japan many times over the years, and the Japanese businessmen he worked with visited my parents in their home, leaving lovely gifts that were always accorded a place of honor. And when my father died, my mother was so touched by their tribute to him. Well, I understand she's done great work with people in need, but her clothes, her hair, her weight, won't she turn people off and offend them just by walking in the room? This was heard during a congregational meeting at a Unitarian Universalist church that was voting on whether or not to ordain a longtime member who had graduated from seminary and been approved by the Ministerial Fellowship Committee. A gifted hospice chaplain, she was nevertheless considered inadequate by some because she was transgendered, and her appearance did not match what some members considered normal for a woman. Luckily, the democratic process prevailed, and she was ordained in a moving ceremony several weeks later and continues her good work among the dying. Breathe. When we see a supersized woman walking down the street, what do we think? Wow, how could she get so fat? Gee, I'm glad I don't have that kind of weight problem. Good thing she's getting some exercise. Wow, what a beautiful woman. When we see a group of young men of color walking down the street together or in a car, do we automatically assume they're up to no good? Or do we just not notice them at all? When a homeless person reaches out to us and says, "Spare any change?" Do we reach into our pocket to help? Do we cross the street and walk on the other side? Do we stop and engage them in conversation, finding out about their particular plight? Or do we just keep our eyes to ourselves and walk past as quickly as possible, glad that we're not in the same situation? It may be harder than we think to affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person. But Jesus did. He ate with tax collectors and sinners. He said, "Let any one of you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone." He encouraged people to move out of their comfort zone and acknowledge the other in all their messy and complicated humanity. We can do no less. In diversity, there is beauty and wonder. The garden of life is filled with flowers and plants of every size, shape, and color, with unique needs for conditions in which to thrive. We are no different. How boring it would be if we were all roses or daisies or dandelions or ferns or cacti or apple trees. Let us accept all our differences for the depth they add to the whole. And let us truly welcome everyone to the table. Amen, and blessed be.